Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard, and I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Hi, Ed Renfrew for Dellis again. At Dellis, you get your choice for the vacation you want. There's Medieval World, Roman World, and of course, West World. Let's talk to some of the people who've been there. Pardon me, sir. What is your name?
Gardner Lewis. Just got back from West World.
Tell us how you liked it, Mr. Lewis.
When you played Cowboys and Indians as a kid, you'd point your fingers and go bang, bang, and the other kid would lie down and pretend dead. Well, West World is the same thing, only it's for real.
This place is really fun.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, and welcome to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 577. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Brian. I think the robot hooker lady malfunctioned Dunaway.
Oh, would you call that a malfunction? Oh, hi. Brian Dunaway for FilmSack here again. FilmSack, the movie podcast of the future today. Here at FilmSack, get no choice. The movie podcast you want. You can visit Crappy Movie World, or Not As Good As I Remember World, and of course, everybody's favorite, What the Hell Did I Just Watch World.
Yeah.
So comb your mustache, throw away your luggage, and hop into one of our early 1970s shiny future past Delta Airlines hovercrafts, where every section is the smoking section, and the wallpaper will burn your eyes like acid in the face of Yul Brynner Robot. Good thing I brought my mirror shades. Now, excuse me. I got to go pilot this mechanical bird like a guy who just snorted a line. Don't do drugs. Anywho, I'm pooped. I was up late last night at my other job where I work as a robot programmer guy. I hate this hacker crap, and he's also a smoker. At a Western theme amusement park. It's a Unix system. We're all going to die if you shut it down. But that's not my job. Nope. I'm in charge of the Old West mosey. Yep. But I'm having trouble with the hands. Hands are hard. How'd you do it, God? I mean, do I let them hang down by the side? Nah, not dramatic enough. How about over the head like a crab? Boy, that scared a lot of guests. And finally, I just went with thumbs in your belt loops while holding your pants up, mosey. Take that, God! Randy, are you programmed to love? How about stop, drop, and roll? Help me!
Wow. Help. How'd you do it, God? I love that.
How'd you do it, God?
That's one of my favorite things you've ever said. That was really good. With us also, Randy. We can't have him get bit by no robot snakes, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Randy.
Okay, I'm going to make the announcement now. What do you mean I have to push the button to talk? I'm already pushing the button. So they can hear me already. Well, I'm going to make the announcement now. Welcome to Future Past Worlds, where you're going to spend your vacation giving us great sums of money, and we're going to pack unnecessary numbers of scientists into an airtight room where they will surveil your every moment 24/7, because that's what rich people want. Strangers with racks and racks of tape recorders to watch and listen as the rich person has sex with a realistic fake woman instead of the millions of real women around the world who have been throwing themselves at you vagina first because of your wealth. Nothing can go wrong. Please attach the very fancy single color card you've been given onto your lapel before you disembark from this plane that requires a dozen air traffic controllers to all talk to your pilot simultaneously. And remember to follow our three easy rules throughout your stay. Number one, if you can shoot it, it's a robot. We haven't figured out how to prevent stabbings, however, so please mind the pointy end of all sharp objects. Number two, please don't shoot the robotic horses more than necessary. Each robotic horse costs us about 15 times more to build and maintain than an actual horse would cost, and we pass that opposite of savings on to you. Number three, female guests are advised to stay in their rooms with the doors locked at all times. Thank you for giving us your money.
Vagina first. That's my. I'm going to hashtag
those that dirt horses.
That's really good. Also, and with us finally, we have Brian. His robot. Sorry, his robots can only see an Atari Vision Ibit.
So nice. True. Yeah, just 4-bit. Well, Randy and I both tackling that excellent orientation video. Here we go. Welcome to Delos and this important orientation video. Right now, you're aboard the People Mover, which will take you to the three worlds of our Delos resort. Medieval world, light banging, West world, moderate banging, and Roman world, where your private parts will go numb and fall off before you board the train, People Mover, back home. Speaking of romance, you'll find it here in Delos. Just try not to think about the fact that the robots you'll be doing it with feature many of the same mechanical parts as a wearing blender. Hey, do you enjoy the Delos life and want to visit more times a year? Right now, our People Mover attendants are handing out application forms for the Delos credit card. Just for signing up today, we'll add 50,000 points to your card. I've flown Frontier lately. Add 50,000 points to your card. And you can use those points for Delos merchandise, future visits, and even the string on the bottom of the holster that'll tie it to your leg. Speaking of guns, swords, and other weapons, don't worry, they're all specifically made to not hurt your fellow human visitors. And if you hurt or kill our robots, all we need to do is scotch tape some jumpers to their foreheads, glue a circuit board from a Mattel football game to their chest, and they'll be good as new. Now, sit back, relax, and get ready for the experience of a lifetime. And please return your seat backs and tray tables to their full upright position and stack your ashtrays on the other ashtrays and make sure to put them all on the ashtray table on the back labeled ashtrays.
Smoking forever in the 70s. No one ever thought it was going to end, you know?
Right. Smoking in the computer lab with all of the equipment. What?
It's so bad.
That's like what Samuel Jackson would do in another Michael Crichton film years later.
Yeah, hold on to your butts and all that. That's a great reference, by the way. The movie is Westworld, if it wasn't obvious, and Michael Crichton's directorial debut, also his writing on this, he wrote it. Very Jurassic Park in theme in some ways.
I'd say really amazing that we're not that far off from a time when you could write a good screenplay and a studio would let you direct the movie. That's amazing.
Make the whole thing. And it was the biggest MGM moneymaker that year. It topped their top box office for that studio. So I guess it was a successful effort as well. Westworld has been on my list of shame for a long time. I've never seen it. I've seen the series. I know about it. I know Yul Brynner's face with the electronics behind it and all the
many times.
Posters and everything. But I never saw it.
Famous shot of the front of his face getting pulled off, and you seeing the electronics on the side. Yeah,
a part of me has been nervous to watch it because I thought there's no way this is going to be cool. It's too old to be cool, or whatever my head would say. And in some ways, that's true. There's things that just don't, hold up. The fashion and, just the look of it and some of the effects and everything. But, man, I really liked Westworld. Yeah, yeah. I had a ball with this.
My take the entire movie was, if we were all of a certain age that we, you know, that we've all like experienced already when this movie came out, it would have been our like Mad Max Fury Road. It would have been like that, that level of impressive to us.
I agree. I agree. I think there's a reason why it's so inspirational to other directors. And I always wondered why they would say it. Like James Cameron said multiple times, my Terminator is inspired by Yul Brynner's Runaway Robot Cowboy. Others have said similar things about the movies they made. And I just thought, really? Because that looks cheeseball. And how could you, whatever. And I just kind of dismissed it. But I get it. And I think that this, even though all the stories around this are that Yul Brynner's out of money and he'll do anything in the 70s, that's kind of the, there's trivia in here about this. I looked some stuff up on Wikipedia. Sure enough, in that era, he was like scraping, just couldn't get enough jobs to pay off his debts. Well, and so he would do anything, but I thought he was amazing in this. I thought he was perfect for it.
They do it great. Like for a 1974 film or 73, 74, whenever this was, they do a great job of making you feel the real danger of this, you know, this Yul Brynner robot that, that you think you've killed. That is maybe the worst gunslinger in town, really, because he's so easy to kill when you're, well, when you're trying.
Vision, his vision is 30 by 60.
It's not good. At first, but he got an upgrade.
I counted the pixels. I counted the pixels. It's 30 by 60.
It's not a lot. It's, his vision sucks, but it's for the time. So this is the big innovation of this movie. This holds the record for the first movie to use computer-generated imagery in some way. So you, I don't know if you can call it CG. I don't think it quite fits that.
If it's computer generated, it is.
Well, you're right. You know what? CGI is computer generated imagery. So you're right.
Yeah.
Either
yeah.
they taught a computer to paint every frame of the eyeballs, or a human sat and painted every frame of the eyeballs. But that was, that was some kind of animation.
I don't think it was. I thought it was just like they were shining a light that was reflecting in his eyes towards the camera, like you were just getting.
I can show you.
He had contact lenses.
I can show you a couple of scenes where they're like, especially there's a woman that goes haywire, and you can see the animation. Like it was, whether it was computer generated or not, and I don't know, maybe it was added in this particular transfer.
Oh, you're talking about on their eyes. You're saying, I wondered about that.
Their pupils are white.
I wonder. I thought they were creative with like clothes. Oh, really? They were contacts. I couldn't find shit on this.
There were.
I couldn't find anything on this. I just knew they looked cool, and I thought, man, how did you guys pull that shit off? That's cool.
Yeah,
I posted on.
Oh, I was gonna say, especially when Yul Brynner is walking down the dark hallway towards Richard Benjamin near the end, and it's a dark hallway, so you're thinking, all right, if they're shining some light that is reflecting in Yul Brynner's eyes, that light is not hitting anywhere else that makes it look like it's, you know, like casting.
The more I think about this, I think that particular effect was added in this Blu-ray transfer. I think that somebody went back and touched it up.
Totally possible. I can't find any reference to it anywhere, but it was very effective and worked for me. Even when the hooker like woke up and had a moment, like a hiccup, and her eyes were like that light in it, and I went, these are creepy now. I don't like this. It's weird.
So from shooting Westworld by Michael Crichton, because he has to write a book about the movie he directed. That was about the book that he wrote. He said the three problems were especially tricky. One was the robot eyes. I wanted eyes that only looked slightly unreal, not strikingly bizarre. After some experimentation, we settled on 80% reflectant mirrored contact lenses, which gave us the flexibility to control the kick by lighting. They also had the virtue of permitting the actors to see through them.
Dunaway, point Dunaway.
This is what I read.
Nicely
done. I read it. I like the conspiracy theories better.
Very effective.
Real quick, before we get emails, and I know Brian just sort of said it as an aside, but we know that this wasn't a book. This was just a pure screenplay. There was no original content for this. It was just a screenplay.
And you said that it was his directorial debut. It was actually his second film.
Ah, damn it.
As a director. Before being allowed to direct this, he had to make a TV movie to kind of, you know, get his feet under him. And it was based on a story he wrote called Pursuit. The movie was called Pursuit. The story was called Binary.
What was the Red Alien Dust movie that was kind of like, you know, War of the Worlds, where this
Andromeda Strain.
That's the one I was thinking.
He didn't direct that. And that was based on a book, though.
He wrote it, though.
Yeah, that was definitely a book. Let's see. 26 novels.
Good, too.
It is 26 novels total. I forgot he did Disclosure. That guy did a lot.
That's a good one to forget once you've seen the movie. The book is really good, but boy, the movie is, as we've seen here.
Yeah.
Like, he got to make some serious money as a director while writing these things, and it allowed him to sort of retire into just writing novels, you know? And, like, then he finally becomes really famous and successful.
Yeah.
Like, he's not really noted for being a director, you know?
No. I mean, it's mostly his books adapted and then some more than others. Jurassic Park, obviously, probably the biggest example of success. But I think, like, you know, Andromeda Strain is well regarded still to this day. And that's the thing I wanted to get to about this computer vision that they kept showing from the perspective of Yul Brynner. It is... We look at it now and go, it looks like, you know, freaking pixelated nightmare. But at the time, who else was doing this? Nobody. There wasn't even an idea of like a dithered pixel kind of LED. That's not even a thing in the early 70s. So in a lot of ways, this is like, I look at it now and go, oh yeah, it's like rudimentary digital vision. But I look at it from the eyes of someone who lived then and then went to see this movie. This must have seemed like freaking magic and weird. And
I know. Yeah. And we were still coming out of a time when you could still go to the theater and see a Western, right? And so you hardly ever see Westerns very much anymore in the way that we think of Westerns. And wow, I mean, if you could forget, you'd be there for a while watching this movie and you could really forget that you're watching, you know, something that's not a Western. Mm-hmm. And then all this stuff starts happening. You're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is blowing my mind right now.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. He always looked like Stephen Colbert to me for some reason. Michael Crichton.
Yul Brynner?
No. Michael Crichton. If you look at Crichton in a photo, you'd be like, oh, yeah, it looks like, you know.
Oh, yeah, he kind of does. Yeah.
His Wikipedia photo in particular, he just looks like a young... version of that. Yeah. Died too soon.
It's funny. Lymphoma. I don't know if I've ever seen, I'm sure I've seen, because I've read a lot of his books, I'm sure I've seen pictures of him, but seeing it, it feels like, yeah, that's never what I picture Michael Crichton to look like. And I don't know why, but I pictured some grizzled, more, you know,
old
gray haired dude. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I picture, what's his face? Attenborough from Jurassic Park, basically.
So he's interesting because he received a medical degree from Harvard Medical School in 69, but did not practice. He chose to
69,
write.
Dude.
It must be crazy to do like 10 years at medical school and then go, I'm going to write books.
He used it for great effect, though. I mean, if you read any of his novels, I mean, he does. He kind of weaves in and out of technical aspects of stuff that makes the sci-fi so good, because usually he was always watching for what the next big, you know, science advancement was, and uses that to harness our fears, right? He would go, okay, this is things that's coming up. What should we be afraid of? And how will this all play out? I always loved it. That's what Jurassic Park is one of his best as far as all that goes.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Humanity reaching beyond. And
he understands enough of the science that he actually can be plausible about how it plays out in the book. Yeah, I think that's really cool. Congo, different story. That's a bad movie.
Yeah, except for like a few of them. Congo, Timeline. Yeah.
The book is amazing, supposed to be really good, but that movie's so bad.
The book is really good.
Yeah. Book is great.
Yeah.
And I want to make a little point about things that Michael Crichton wrote, because I think there's a reason why we connect with so much of it. And I'm talking about before 9/11. After 9/11, he became a Rush Limbaugh. But before that,
did he?
Did he really? I'm sorry to say his final years were hard to deal with. But this guy, he had a take on how you write a story that connects with people. And he wrote Twister, for instance, and that movie is not about tornadoes. That movie is about some people who were in a romantic relationship and fell apart and are trying to rediscover why they might want to get back together. And the tornadoes are the backdrop for all of that. Mm-hmm. Jurassic Park, it's not entirely about reanimating ancient creatures. It's about how that would impact the world of paleontology. You know, like, it's about the people. How do the people deal with this? How do they react to this? How they survive this, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And like,
now, you're talking about the book or the movie? Because I think Spielberg's a people person, and he kind of...
He's a big person.
Talk about both.
I didn't think the book had that as much. But go ahead.
The book very much gets you into how they relate to each other and you know what they're thinking and so on. And I feel like that is true about Westworld. I feel like Westworld, maybe it fails at this a little bit in the telling, but Westworld is supposed to be about these rich people and how they are dealing with what's happening, how they're, you know, these two guys are friends, right? You know, like they're sharing a room almost, or is it? Maybe they're in two rooms.
Adjoining rooms.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of like interest here for you as a human, right? And that's the key, I think, to understanding Michael Crichton's effect. It's not just about this cool place and how it came to be, but you're going to tell a story where I actually feel my heart's pounding because I'm empathizing with this guy, you know, I felt something when James Brolin gets shot. I really felt
I couldn't stop drawing parallels to Jurassic Park. I hated that in my head as I was watching this. I was like, oh,
you can't help it.
So he's just like into theme parks going bad. Okay, I got you.
Yeah,
sweet.
I mean, a lot of me thinks that Jurassic Park, written in, let's see, that was in 1990. You get the feeling that was the culmination of maybe what most of his ideas for Westworld.
Obviously has a fear of Unix systems and them shutting down, and then you get stuck somewhere because that was the theme here too. I kept waiting for them to try to find some way to, you know, send somebody out with the robots to the power locker.
I love that in 73 they're all sitting around going, you know, the future of computers will always be reel to reel tape. That'll always be here.
I
think you can extend it, this like trope, way out beyond Jurassic Park, because Jurassic Park is a story about humans being stuck in a place where everything is trying to kill them. And like, so is Congo. You're stuck in the Congo with a bunch of super intelligent apes. And Sphere, you're stuck at the bottom of the ocean with some dangerous aliens, and so on and so on. Timeline, you're stuck in the past with people who want to kill you. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like this is kind of his go-to trope, like overall.
Yeah, sure. But this was like, well, I mean, you could even tell because of the dialogue how early this was in knowing about computer viruses. Are you telling me that a computer can get a virus?
Yeah. And that's, I guess what I'm saying is some of this stuff jumped out at me as like innovative and it's old hat now, but at the time, I don't think in 73 these concepts were common at all. And so that was really cool. I mean, there's obviously this very visceral thing of I'm getting chased by a crazy thing and it's going to kill me and it's nonstop and it won't stop until I find a way to kill it. And that
can't stop.
That plays, you know, with basic human emotion, but I didn't expect all this other stuff on top of it. Now, you know, it's a cheesy 70s looking. Everything looks like it was made in the 70s.
Sure.
The collars are terrible. You know, the clothes and the stuff and the whatever, but the one part I could not get over, and it was echoed by somebody on, I think it was Twitter or somewhere, but they could not get over the fact that these two main protagonists in this film, James Brolin and the other guy,
Benjamin, Richard Benjamin,
they are like time traveling Christian Bale, and Pedro Pascal. Yeah. I mean, they just look like those two guys. And I thought to myself, I could go for that remake. I would watch that.
Yeah, remake the movie. I don't understand how the series missed all of the, like, the best things about this movie for me, you know? Yeah.
I guess, like, you know what? That's funny you say that, because I like the series as well, but I think you're actually right about this. But I didn't know it until I saw this. The show wanted to get a little too esoteric for its own good, in my opinion. Sure. It wanted to go too far.
What are the ethics of these?
I don't even mind the ethics stuff. It's just because you have a show, right? You have to pad things out, but my problem with it is this has a purity of focus, which the only time I think it strays from is I really don't care about the other two worlds in here. Just focus on Westworld.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is maybe a little smarter in that way, at least for the first season or two. But the movie's just like this pure, like, hey, it's all going wrong and it's going to get worse and we've got to survive it. That could have been a better show. Again, how do you drag that out? I don't know. Maybe that's a problem. Maybe this is a single season. I don't know. But I came away going, I still like the series, even though they canceled it early. It pisses me off.
Oh, yeah.
We're in the times of cancellation, by the way. We just found out they canceled the series, what, about a week ago, maybe?
A week ago.
After, yeah.
something like that.
Wild. Yeah.
Which is a bummer. Just I'd love and some I'm closure, hoping, but whatever.
I'm hoping that, you know, they say, all right, you know what? We have one last little bit of the story to tell to wrap things up. We'll just do it as a movie.
Yeah, do it like Deadwood did.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
don't take as long as it took you with Deadwood.
Right, exactly. Please.
That'd be great. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just there's something about this that really elevated it. And now I finally understand why people who have problems with the series and love the original, what they're talking about. Because up till now, I thought they were full of shit. But I get
right.
I get it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I mean, maybe it shouldn't have been a longer series, but I just feel like it's a bit of a miss that the series didn't like start earlier, basically, because that's where I feel like so much of this movie is so good. It starts with you sort of wondering, what are they going to? Who are these people, these wealthy people? How are they already thinking about whatever this mysterious thing they're going to is? And you could have episode after episode after episode of just that, just the preparatory stuff, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Sure.
I forgot he made ER. I always forget Michael Ryan.
Yeah.
Was in charge of that, which again, ER is this. Like, it's a bunch of people in relationships, but it's also everybody running around all the time trying not to have people die. It's just like, all right, Michael Crichton, he was running from something.
It wasn't his only trope, this people trapped in a place with dangerous enemies. Like, it wasn't the only thing.
No.
And by the way, one of the versions of that trope is called a holodeck malfunction. Mm-hmm. that's the name of it. And
usually involving Moriarty.
Yeah. And if you think about it, like, that's not really a thing for 17 years after this movie. Like, it's this movie, and then a lot of time goes by before a bunch of popular entertainment starts aping on it, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. But
I mean, Cylons, you know, weren't that thing in the original Battlestar Galactica, but became this when they redid it. You know, these replicants that you couldn't tell that they were human. And Blade Runner 2, speaking of replicants.
Yeah, that's a good one. John Carpenter, famous horror master filmmaker, John Carpenter. Yeah. Says that he based the indestructible nature of his killer Michael Myers entirely on Yul Brynner's character in this film.
Wow.
Yeah. And even Schwarzenegger says, because he and Cameron talked about it, but he says, I focused on trying to do what he did for Terminator, first Terminator.
It's a very effective thing. You know, acting as a singular focused killing machine, basically, is what Yul Brynner has to do. After that first interaction in the bar and mention, he needs his mama, you know, whatever, which is great. I hope you have that
boy, babe.
Oh yeah. I got some of that.
Yeah. But having him basically turn into this solely based on killing Richard Benjamin.
Yeah. He suddenly activated the nemesis system. It was pretty good. I love it.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting that. I like that. He got paid 75 grand for his work, which at the time, if you adjust for inflation, that's about 485 grand a day.
That's a lot of rubles.
It's a decent, it's a lot of rubles. I was going to actually ask that question. Do we have a favorite Russian-born actor? Because I think Yul Brynner's up there.
Yeah, Yul Brynner's up there, right? He's
Yakov Smirnoff. No.
Who was there was a skater guy or something that was a big deal for White Knights guy?
He was a skater guy.
Remember dude?
Anton.
Sugar. No.
No. Sugar. Star Trek. Was he Russian born?
No, he just played a Russian. Anton Yeltsin, I think, is from, well, he may be, his background, family and stuff might be, but I'm pretty sure he's, let's see, I could actually look it up.
I think he was born here. Okay. I am going to go with.
He was raised here, but he was born in Leningrad. You are absolutely correct. Okay. Russian born. Yep.
I mean, obviously, we know, like, Mila Jovovich, and...
So she's Ukrainian, though. Are we asking USSR born?
No, let's say...
The flux of things. Maybe we should wait on that part of it.
I don't believe this thing that comes up on Google when you say Russian-born actors, and it's got people like Michael Douglas, Neil Diamond, Mel Brooks, Franco.
What?
I think we're naming people who played Russians at some point.
Yeah, maybe those aren't born there. I don't know. Like, I don't even know if this is a category. Maybe Yul Brynner owns it. I don't know. His IMDb photo looks like Putin, though. He looks like Putin. Vladimir Putin.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah,
when you go to how tall is Yul Brynner? He looks kind of short in this film. I think he's short. Laugh. I loved it.
I think he's short. Let's see. I can tell you. It's right here. He is. Oh, this is Wikipedia page.
Oh, here we go.
5'8".
Here's everybody's favorite Russian-born actor, Alexander Godunov, the Witness and Die Hard.
Oh, yes.
He's fantastic. Oh, white-haired guy?
Blonde-haired guy.
Or blonde-haired guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the one that gets he gets ice cream in the face in Witness.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, Dolph Lundgren, my favorite Russian.
Yeah, he's the one that comes out for revenge in the TGI Fridays guy shoots him.
No, he's not.
Yeah. That would break him.
Yeah. I thought he was something else, but I guess
not. He's not. Wait, oh, you're talking about?
I'm talking about white. No, blonde haired dude. Oh, Lundgren's definitely not. He's Swedish.
No, he's not. Yeah,
but Godunov is.
I was making a joke.
Yeah, you would make jokes.
He was born on Sakhalin Island at the far eastern end of the former Soviet Union.
Oh, nice. Well, he got out of there right in time.
The ass end of Soviet Union, sweet.
Yul Brynner, for the record, just for funsies here, died in 85. He was 65 years old.
That's
all. He's chain smoked since he was 10, and everything he had in the end was a cause of that. Multiple heart attacks. His lungs were all effed. He had all kinds of issues. So don't smoke, kids.
And live the good life.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It was hard to watch some of the smoking in this movie. Like, there was so much smoking.
There was a lot.
Like, okay, you're in an old Western bar. That's fine. But like, you know, I'm smoking literally in bed. No, I can't take that. I'm sorry.
I just love the Delos board meeting where everybody's got one of those giant glass ashtrays.
Yes.
Yep. That's how it was.
There was a time in this country where you couldn't even go to McDonald's, that little metal ashtray table. It was just. Yeah.
Did you guys ever young enough or whatever to get on a flight that had smoking? Because I remember one or two very early in my life, and that was it.
I flew back and forth to California alone every summer. For 2 weeks and since I was 8 and so I remember those flip up little ashtrays in the armrests.
Yes. So weird.
I'd play with those for an hour and a half of that flight.
Yep.
Flip flop, flip flop.
Turns out they didn't
They
didn't have good in flight entertainment back then for a continental flight like that.
No, really didn't.
No. One thing I noticed here, one thing I really like is the difference between what you would pay at Delos if you went then versus today. So here's your inflation.
Inflation.
$1,000 a day is what they said in the movie. Adjust that for inflation today, you would pay $6,475.32 a day in 2022.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And we would have, if we were making this movie right now, we would have talked about that. We would have talked about how it's pricing out everyone except the elite few.
Yeah.
And what that means.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I've got to ask though, this is supposed to be this isn't like this was supposed to be happening at the time. It's supposed to be in the future. So had he already adjusted for inflation?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I mean, I don't know. I think they just thought 1,000 sounded high and so they did it.
Won't be a lot of money. 1,000 sounds good.
1,000 sounds a lot.
It still sounds high. It sounds like a lot of money per day. Okay.
It's like we only paid Yul Brynner 75 of those, so we can do it. Let's do 1,000.
You couldn't even be here for 75 days.
That's right. I know this is kind of aping our Star Trek connections a little bit, but you guys notice Majel Barrett as the robotic brothel keeper lady?
Right out of the gate. Yeah. Well, first thing I thought, oh, look, there's a Gene Roddenberry's wife right there.
Hanging out, doing her thing. I saw her and I went, she looks familiar. And then I went and looked it up. That was.
Did you capture some of her talking?
I don't remember. I might have.
It is not her Luoxana Troi voice. That's what she has. Apparently some different voices, and she has the computer voice, Luoxana Troi, and this, and whatever this is not those.
I agree. It's also,
you,
I felt that way.
The gun fanning thing.
No, that was great though. I love that. But I don't understand what Dick Van Patten's voice was. Also, I didn't know Dick Van Patten was in this.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't the Winnie the Pooh sounding voice like he had in Eight Is Enough. It was very different.
I'm the sheriff now.
Yeah, that was weird.
Eight Is Enough. Eight Is Enough had like 3 seasons. How did that show become so mighty?
I don't know either. It we watched that all the time growing up.
Yeah, it ran in syndication forever. I think that's the reason why. same three seasons.
Yeah.
For years.
Honestly, I remember thinking. Years? I remember thinking Charles in Charge.
Charles in
it's a whole different show.
I thought that was cool, but only because the one kid, I forgot his name, that always hangs out with Scott Baio.
Willie Ames.
I forgot Yeah, at the time it was like, oh, Willie Ames has a new comedy. I'm going to go watch that. And now I look back and go, what are you doing? Who cares what Willie Ames is doing?
Ames was great for syndication, because Charles in Charge was direct syndication, right? It was.
Was it?
Oh, was
one
it?
Of the, one of the first
oh,
ones.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. I thought that was a
lot of stuff.
Like a long, I don't know what I thought.
No, there was no prime time of that. It was just like all afternoon stuff. It's like, there you go, straight to syndication.
Yeah. I mean, look, Star Trek would be that. I'm grateful for straight to syndication. Like TNG, people have it, we revere it. But what other straight to syndication do you revere?
Was I watching that on what channel was that? UPN? What was it on
UPN
originally?
UPN didn't start until Voyager. Voyager was a UPN production or UPN premiere, and that ran on that new network.
Yes.
But prior to that, TNG and DS9 were just straight to syndication. So they were whatever channel your local affiliate picked it up.
Right.
And I loved that. I mean, those were so great. But then what else was there for syndication? Freaking Hercules and Xena Warrior Princess. Yeah. Hers was better. Hercules sucked.
Well, duh.
Yeah. Xena was awesome.
Way to state the obvious.
That is true. So anyway, a couple things. I'll tell you what grossed me out. Let's just play this here.
Gross.
What do you guys think?
Was it Josh Brolin having his lips in the dirt?
That was great when he died. he was kissing
the dirt is what he's doing.
Let's check with the judges. Correct. That is correct.
That was not a body double. That was him with his lips.
He's flopping around like a fish.
Yeah, he really took a bullet.
That's a great little stunt. There were some really good stunts in this movie.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
The one falling off the roof with Yul Brynner's second death.
His stunt guy really goes for it.
Yeah.
He flips over. That's dangerous.
Even though the blood in this movie looked like red paint. They had a lot more blood than I expect. A lot of blood packs popping in people's backs and fronts and stuff like that.
Oh, for sure. Like making it look like the bullet went straight through Yul Brynner in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Just amazing. What'd you think about 70s slow motion? How was that? That was pretty fun.
I don't know about that. A 70s slow motion. You know what? I'll take their slow motion in the 70s over their zoom up to someone's face in the 70s. I hate that.
For sure. Do not do that. Except when you need to show me a robot's face like melting or coming apart. That's I'll take the zoom then. That's good.
Yeah.
I love that Yul Brynner's robot. What's the robot's name? Anyway, I love when after he gets asked. The gunslinger. I think that's what it was. After he gets asked in the face, he just walks over to the eyewash station.
Yeah.
And then our hero kind of walks off. Like, well, that's done.
Yeah, I'm all done now. Yeah.
Huge plot hole.
Yeah, right? That was
we need to talk about. I'm glad it was at the end of the movie when this happens. Yeah. But apparently, all you need to defeat these robots is a little spritzer bottle. Because when he tries to give a drop of water to one of them, it kills
the
her.
Woman. Yeah, in the right.
So you're going to tell me the gunslinger survived washing his face? No.
Yeah, I laughed out loud at that part where the lady died. That made me laugh. I love how
the guy on the three-wheel golf cart out in the woods, desert. I love how he outlined the entire rest of the movie. He was like, yeah, you can put some acid in their face. That'd be great.
Yeah, before I get a bullet to the chest, please do these four steps to solve your problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy made me laugh. I don't know why, but her drinking the water, or him trying to give water to a robot and her burning out. Yep. I don't know why it made me laugh, but it did. Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't understand why that guy just succumbed to his inevitable death. Why don't you jump on the horse and see if you can get away?
The employee fixing his tire.
Yeah.
The technician.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was.
I think he thought that he had a better chance of surviving if he could drive away than hop on a horse.
He gets
especially if the robots are all going crazy. What's to stop the robot horse from not going crazy and taking you into a tree?
I'm mad at the movie for making me think so much about robot horses. That is
it really. Oh my god, the scene the scene when they, okay, after everything is destroyed and they took all, you know, and they, at the nighttime, they have all the robots come back in for repair.
Oh, sure.
And seeing that scene where they're like going over the, you know, the tables of human robots. And then there's like, there's a couple of cats. There's a horse sitting right next really? To it. Oh my God. It is hilarious to see. And I'm like, how did they do that? Did they get that? Is that did,
do that? Does cool. this company drive a herd of robotic cattle through town every day? I need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if yes, do they also have robotic egrets that hang out? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Hang out on the cattle?
Why not? I mean, that's that's left to your imagination a lot. That's where the show really shines, is it does explore like all the tech and the stuff and where it comes from.
Those egrets really they're just an add-on.
Yeah, but and then I have an infinite regress that starts happening. So the janitorial group shows up. Are those robots? And if yes, then were they built by robots? And were those robots built by robots? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I say the cleanup.
You gotta read the book.
I say damage control are real people who are going in there and picking up the robots and putting them.
You got to read the book that doesn't exist. Read that book.
Surely.
Right, exactly.
Read the book. Yeah.
Surely you would just breed and establish a herd of real horses. It's so much cheaper. It's got to be like insanely cheaper to just bring it.
But would horses let a robot ride them? I'm curious.
But also, would they hold still also all night, sitting on top of their thing, waiting for their cue to move? Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I think all that stuff's complicated. The show gets into the horse stuff a lot, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of horse shit.
Their whole intro, like season two or three, has part of their intros is like this big sinewy white skeletal horse moving around. It's pretty cool.
In the opening credits,
The show's biggest mistake is they didn't stay in Westworld. I think getting out into the real world was stupid. I hated that.
I mean, it's the Lost World thing, right? Like, oh, this, you know, for this first part, they go crazy in the park. For the second one, well, what if they get into the real world with all the other people?
That was the scary part, right? When Yul Brynner's gunslinger has the possibility of escape for just a minute. It's like, you're not only worried about the character, you're like, oh shit, he might get out into the really real world. That'd be even scarier. Did this TV series, I haven't watched all of it, I watched some of it. Did it ever get into the other two worlds?
Yes.
The,
yes. You know? Samurai World had a whole thing in season two or three, I forget. And so their worlds were different. They had Samurai World, they had... What else did they show? Is that
I can't remember what the other one was.
I know they talked about it.
I love that all the ladies were like, I want to go to Roman world where all the sexy happens. And all the men were like, I want to shoot shit. Let's go to West world.
And, I expected less. They got a little comedic with it when the bar fights and stuff. They just played that like straight old TV Western.
That was bullshit. If a robot punches you and you fly across the room, the robot's hurting you. You're hurt.
You're hurt.
Same with the swords. I mean, I can understand the bullets are set up to not do that. If the swords just automatically turned into like limp red vines, basically, when you pointed them at a human.
Ooh, owie. Ooh, oh no, Mr. Robot.
That's right.
I love that you went to red vines. I don't know. I didn't expect that.
Limp, like a wet spaghetti noodle.
But I actually wrote that down.
Fantasy
it's like,
world.
Yeah, go ahead.
In Delos and the newer TV series, and we can talk about the 80s Westworld TV series in a little bit.
I didn't know about that. That's news.
Yes, okay. One season of it's called Beyond Westworld, and it's the only way you can watch it now is paying for it on Apple TV.
But just to close your eyes and imagine,
we can watch it. And it's a direct sequel to this. They had Fantasy World, which is basically like medieval world. They had a the Raj, which was not from What's Happening, but was inspired by the European rule of India. Golden Age, Shogun World, which we talked about, War World.
Oh, why would you want to go to War World? That would suck.
And
because apparently you just want to kill people. Like that's a.
Yeah,
that's
1940s, World War II.
At least in like Westworld, you can you can fight a little, love a little, you know.
Yeah, right. I mean, because you're getting the Old West experience, but there's a reason people play, people play Red Dead Redemption or 2 for that. And then if they want to go play Call of Duty and shoot each other with modern weapons, they do that.
I think that's
the concept. Yeah. It's like, here, these are genres and these are
the most
popular
ones. That's just me moving my thumbs around. Actually getting out there and doing it, that sounds like a lot of work.
Oh, it does, dude. But see, that's the fantasy, I don't know if it's the real, I don't think the truth plays out like this in the future, but the fantasy is you're really shooting people, you know?
How fun would it be to, like, you know, go kill Nazis, go to a park where you're actually shooting Nazi robots? I mean, come on.
I'd do it.
In real life, dream. I don't know. Yeah. On a game, it seems, I can kind of disconnect it. It's like, oh, I'm pretty good at shooting things. That's fun.
Sure,
but if actually seeing a human that looks like I don't know if I could do that.
It'd be hard. Yeah, I think part of it too is I'm just too tired though too.
Like, that's too. Yeah. So I'm saying I can't get time for this.
So people are like,
in Westworld, you couldn't get by and not have to kill anybody. But in War World, you're killing people.
Yeah, you're killing
people. It's happening.
Right. Or people, you know, somebody says this to me, "Hey, you want to go golfing?" I'm like, but I'll play a video.
Like outdoor stuff.
I'll play.
I'm not really into
PGA
that.
Tour all day long.
I'll play that game. Right. Yeah, I will. I'll put all my virtual quarters in there and play all day. But I ain't going to your damn. I'm not standing in the sun and dealing with bugs and flies and you and your shitty thing and the people ahead of us.
Right.
I don't want to do anything.
Hooking
that.
And slicing. Which,
that's why I don't think there's any. I don't think we ultimately this is the ultimate destination for video games. Yeah. No.
Bye. I had a coworker shared an office with a guy named Peter. Great, one of the greatest people I ever worked with, and he was a big windsurfer, and he'd irritatingly always use the word epic for any positive thing like that he was describing. He was like, I was out windsurfing, the waves and the wind were epic. It's like, okay, that works, but you know the fries you just got at Carl's Jr. are not epic.
No, they're not.
No, he was also the type whenever he'd take a drink, he always finished it with. Always.
See, I like those people. They're like, they're max enjoying life. Look at that person, max enjoying life.
Yeah. He'd bring out my passive aggressive, is that drink refreshing? Whenever you do that.
Or was it
anyway, yeah. He and I got a copy of PGA Tour, whatever it was, back in 1994, and played it, you know, during breaks and whatever. And we thought we'd be so good at golf because of that game. So across the street from our office was an actual golf course, the Indian Peaks Golf Course. And it's a very flat course, not a lot of hills and stuff. So we're like, all right, well, you know, we're really good at the video game. I'll bet we'd be really good at the golf game because we, you know, same rules applied. We get out there and it's like, zhoing, you know, balls flying out into the street and all over the place. We kept at it and got okay. I don't think I could ever get more than like two or three pars per 18 holes. Yeah. There's a lot of eagles and double eagles and let's just pick up the ball and move on. Right. But it was funny how, you know, you playing a video game and thinking you'd be really good at a thing, you know, shooting Nazis or Red Dead Redemption West, Old West, and then actually going and doing it's like, oh yeah, no, far, there's a far cry.
Yeah, that's why I always said, like, when powers that be would say games like Doom and Quake are training our children to be murderers, I'm like, right. I got bad news for you, dude. Those guns are nothing like what you're going to do.
There's no Last Starfighter happening in this world.
Nobody goes, where's the WASD on this gun? Like, nobody.
Exactly.
It doesn't work that way.
I agree with everything you just said. However, I do think the movie is right and probably even plays it a little safe that every rich dude would be going to this brothel. Like, paying whatever it costs to find out what is under the skirts of these women robots.
Yeah, that is true. I think, you know, the Epstein Islands of the world, whatever, where billionaires go and act out their most horrid fantasies. Because they can, because they're billionaires. Like that is definitely a thing. And historically, there's lots of stories about you know people who are just all sorts of debauchery happens. So that always rung true to me, and it did in this movie too. Like if you're loaded and you're bored and you've tried every earthly pleasure there is, you go for what's next, lady.
Yeah, go spend $2,000 a day for a fleshlight with a face, basically.
And then the movie got some of the subtleties of it. Cause like Richard Benjamin, Peter comes away from that experience kind of like, it was meh.
Yeah. Right.
Like I thought that was really cool. He didn't
halfway through having sex with her. The hooker starts downloading new firmware.
Yeah. I saw that.
You almost see a little progress bar in her eyes. Yeah. Beach ball.
All the robots looked bored. They looked terribly bored. How do robot in the 70s look bored?
I think that's what they thought it would be like, is that, you know, robots would be very inhuman in a way.
Yeah, right. I'm so glad you captured the gif of the elevator operating woman in the People Mover who watches the door close and then just decides to look directly at the camera looking bored, like she's done this scene 1,000 times.
Yeah, and it was a funny choice. It made me laugh. Actually, there's a lot of great, there's a great gif potential in this movie, more than I thought there would be.
Yeah, the other big one, the whole thing with the reflecting sunglasses, that still gets used so much, maybe not as much today, but certainly like as recently as the early 2000s, definitely in the 90s. Yeah. And it always irritates me that and the, I'm using a computer, so somebody needs to project what I'm doing on the computer onto my face, like lines of code going up my face.
Don't like that.
You know. Yeah, it's so distracting. It takes me right
out. Screen economy. I actually kind of like it. And oh man, God, the focus you'd have to have to fly that apparently is a lot, because that dude was laser focused in on operating that hovercraft. Yeah.
I really think Christian Bale and Pedro Pascal would be perfect in these roles. But do you think this is viable? Like, would it? Let's pretend the show didn't happen, and we just heard there was a remake coming. Do you think enough people would be stoked? Is this too lost to time?
Like, I think that it's too soon after the show. I feel like the show tells the widest story that you'd try and pare down into a movie. And
I thought you said widest story. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Widest with the D.
Widest. I got you. Wide. Right.
Yeah. So let's say you put 30 years between it, you could probably do it.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I'd even say 10 years, you know, down the line, and you figure out a different way to do it, right? It can't just be robots are going crazy. What do we do? It's, you know, it's got to be, there's got to be some other element. I don't even know what that is.
Could just be robots are going crazy. Like that's pretty good.
It'd be lazy. I mean, but you know, that's been done so many times. It would be disappointing if that's all they did with it.
Unless they just did it so freaking well. Like that's all I would really need here. Give me some really great action and amp it all up. I'm okay with that same plot. Just go nuts with it. Like set pieces and moments of like
the Terminator aspect of a Yul Brynner gunslinger that just keeps hunting the person that shot him initially. That aspect is great. And that, you know, that the danger that creates and makes you feel, there was nothing like that in the,
The show, by the way, didn't do it. The show thought it for a minute. We thought they were going to, cause here comes Ed Harris in a black, all in black with a cool hat. And we're like, oh, it's Man in Black.
It's the Yul Brynner character.
Yeah, we found our guy. And no, they don't do that.
No.
Which really bummed me out. That's one of my biggest disappointments in the, after seeing the movie, it's weird, but seeing the movie, I'm like, well, there's your strength. What did the TV give us? A lot of mystery, a lot of people with little side stories. Right. It's a series. I get it. You can't just do one, you know, quick plot, but.
I get you. Yeah, because
once you destroy, if Ed Harris is that gunslinger, then once you destroy him, then that's like, okay, that's it. We don't repair that guy because he's bad.
Yeah. But had they made a movie with that cast, with him as the gunslinger, it was 2 hours long and he went crazy and tried to kill everybody, I'd be into that.
Sure. Yeah,
I'd watch the H out of that. That'd be great.
I was so glad to notice Dunaway brought up the cinematography. Like, it was so good. It was so freaking good.
Fantastic.
And it made me go remind myself of Gene Pulido. This was our cinematographer for this film, and he did a bunch of other interesting things. He was the director of photography for Future World. He for some reason was hired to do comedies. He cinematographer for Bad News Bears and Up in Smoke, Cheech and Chong, right? And I just like it I love noticing. Like really seeing, oh, there's a person who thought a lot about what's this going to look like as a single shot. This could be a movie poster of a shot. And it was over and over. There's a shot of the two leads out in the desert when they first try to escape, where I'm just like, wow, that's, you know, like, that's a lot of thought behind this.
I agree. I thought that all looked really good. But did it strike you? Because it did me. I was like, why is this set so familiar? Something's weird. And I couldn't get it out of my head. And I went and looked it up. It's freaking the same exact set from either the next year or the year previous that they used for Blazing Saddles. It's the same one.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But it took me out a little bit. I'm like, oh, there's that place where the horse farted or whatever happened. I don't remember what happened, but some joke happened.
The horse farted.
I can't remember
when the horse got punched out.
The horse got punched. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. And they have
a robot
scene
now, so we know it's a robot. So it's okay.
They have a scene in Westworld where it's right in front of that exact same saloon or whatever the hell building it was.
That section of the WB Burbank Studios, which is, doesn't exist anymore, but that section was used a lot. That's not just Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. That's where I thought of it. But you're right. It's probably in everything, right? Anything Western.
It was used for Fantasy Island and Fall Guy. And, you know, we watched the movie Maverick. Maverick was shot on that set, some of it.
I never really thought of it, but Fantasy Island is kind of this concept, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Right? Yeah.
It's just different worlds, essentially.
Yeah. The concept being like, oh, you're coming here for your ultimate thing, but it's going to not go the way you expect.
You're really here for some psychiatrist moments, because that's what's going to happen. Yeah.
Far fewer robots on Fantasy Island.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah. Really just Tattoo and Dr. Rourke.
Just Tattoo. Mr. Rourke. Yeah.
Dr. Rourke.
By the way, what's it called? The Roman Gardens scenes?
Yes.
Those were filmed in Beverly Hills, apparently. There's a mansion in Beverly Hills that was used for a bunch of stuff like this.
That doesn't surprise me.
We saw it in Commando. It's got a bunch of credits.
Wait a minute, that's the one where he goes and attacks it and all the terrorists fight him?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
Yeah, it's called Harold Lloyd's Green Acres Estate.
Was it really Harold Lloyd's house?
Green Acres.
I don't know who Harold Lloyd is, so I have no idea.
I don't either.
Yeah. Some old Hollywood type. He sounds like a Hollywood type, doesn't he? Ah, Harold Lloyd, he made that picture happen. If that picture hadn't happened, no Harold Lloyd. Blah, blah, blah. That's what it sounds like. Hey, Brian Ibbett, was that your phone call?
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I don't know. Wait. We could look him up, I suppose.
Well, no. I'm just saying, okay, that's interesting that you don't know who Harold Lloyd is.
I really don't.
Silent film actor Harold Lloyd, I'm assuming is what you're referring to.
I assume so.
Comedic value. You've seen like him hanging off the clock in those black and whites. You've seen him avoiding the house falling on him.
Okay.
Wait, the hanging off the clock is
it's not Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin.
No, not Chaplin. The other one.
Buster Keaton.
He's probably done one too, but Harold Lloyd is the one that really? I remember. I don't know if Buster Keaton did one or not. Yeah. Harold Lloyd's huge. Yeah.
Okay. Look at you, Mr. Old Soul, with your Harold Lloyd knowledge.
Well, I just watched some documentaries.
The Harold Lloyd, the famous one that you see.
Yeah. You think Harry Lloyd is like, listen, I've been real popular here in Hollywood. See, build me a house that looks like Greek Garden. See, you think he did that and then said, make other movies with my yard. Get Commando.
He didn't say a thing. He didn't say a thing.
Maybe he did all of his negotiations silently.
He held up cards while music played and said, here's what I want you to do.
You get the idea.
I love that. That's a really great idea. Who's our guy with the mustache? What's his name? The actor?
Alan Oppenheimer.
All right. That guy's got a really, really hairy armpit. I just want to put it out
there.
Really hairy. Yes, like, just my gosh. When he got in there with the hooker robot, I went.
Wait. You mean the lead. Sorry.
Yeah,
I thought you were talking about the
Richard chief. Benjamin then.
Yeah, Richard Benjamin also.
Oh, well, wait, who's Oppenheimer? He's the...
He was a chief supervisor with the amazing mustache.
He made that bomb, right?
Oh, right. Well, yeah, that's based on him. I assume they named him Oppenheimer for that, right? Because he's the guy that made the
bomb. No.
He's the actor.
No, I understand that. But, right, he's not the character, duh.
So maybe his parents, you know, were really impressed with Oppenheimer.
Maybe he's related to Oppenheimer.
That guy really made a difference in the world.
Could be,
see?
He's still with us. He's
around. That's a pretty unique name. Could be somehow related.
That guy's still working, by the way. He was King Grayskull in He-Man and the Masters of the Universe this year. He's a voice on Chippendale Rescue Rangers that everyone raves about. And he was, he played Skeletor in that. I didn't know they were in that. And then let's see, Toy Story 4, the old timer guy. And that was this guy. He's still, look at him. That's great. Remember Toy Story 4, Brian Ibbett or Dunaway? You'd love that. You'd love it.
I remember. Haven't seen 4 yet. I started watching. I haven't finished it yet. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I didn't care for 3, but 4 was pretty good from what I saw. So I just haven't went back. And
do you do that a lot where you start a thing and then don't pick it up later?
It was one of those things where I was like, I don't know what I want to watch. Disney's on. I'm like, they're kind of featuring Toy Story 4. Let's just get a little taste of vibe to see if it's something I want to sit down and watch, because I do want to sit down and watch it, but not if it's going to be just more Toy Story. Story 3.
Sure.
And so I was like, okay, yeah, I like this. And I just haven't got back to it.
Well, no, there's real stakes, you know, when the toys start dying in Toy Story 4.
Right.
Oh my gosh. He is literally the replacement Skeletor, you guys. So like the original Skeletor.
Yeah. No, back of me. This guy does a lot of voices.
Oh my gosh.
Like a lot.
Yeah. And it's been doing it forever, all through the 90s, all through the 80s. He did other things, but like, you know, the Smurfs from 81 to 89. He was Vanity
he did the
Smurf.
Smurfs.
Yeah, he did the Smurfs.
He was, what Smurf was he?
Let's see.
Old timey Smurf.
Vanity Smurf.
Old timey Smurf.
It was Vanity
He'd
Smurf.
Be on brand.
Vanity Smurf.
Oh, was he Vanity Smurf?
Really?
Yeah. Vanity that's Smurf. Wild.
I'm sorry. He played Vanity Smurf, Father Time, and Winslow. Whoever Winslow. But then he was in Brave Star. Who'd he play?
Oh, really?
He was Outlaw Scuzz. Oh.
He did everything.
I love Brave Star.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is the guy works and continues to, and hats off to a guy who's probably, 1930. What does that make him? 90.
Yeah, he is 92 now.
92. Wow. That's great.
Still kicking it. One of the few that's still kicking it. Everyone in this movie died.
Yeah, they're all long dead. And well, no wait, James Brolin's still here. He's around.
Oh, and when you point at a movie, Scott, and say, "Who's the guy with the great mustache?" I'm thinking James Brolin.
Sure, but he didn't have one in this. He was shaved in this.
He didn't. Sure, but my gosh, his hair. Oh my gosh.
Have you seen it now?
It's beautiful.
He has beautiful hair now.
So feathery.
Could you do a new one with his son? Get Josh in there. Thanos in there. Why not? You know, he's got James Brolin blood, and then who's the mom? Is Streisand, I think, was his mom.
Oh, Streisand, right. Yeah.
I think. Anyway, you can't go wrong, is what I'm saying. Look at him now. So there's a picture of him now. Look at that hair now.
Gorgeous. Oh,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You're gorgeous, gorgeous man.
He is a never ending bucket of handsome, that guy.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah.
Now kiss the dirt.
Steely eyes.
Just get him in every Western he needed to get done. Get him and get a buddy cop going with him and Sam Elliott. Like, what are you even doing here? He was in Lightyear. I like that movie. Okay. It was all right. Anyway, anything else you guys want to mention here about the deal? About the movie?
See, what else?
I really enjoyed this. Here.
I did too. I really had a good time.
I would. Yeah. I was really shocked.
Did you? Is this your first time, Dunaway?
Yeah. First time of watching this movie.
Same,
correct.
Same. Oh. Yeah. I really liked it. I this is now one I think I would watch again, and I would like watch with people, and I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I can't think of another early 70s movie I can do that with. Maybe Chocolate Factory or something. But
there's parts of it that kind of sag, and it's kind of like, can I fast forward this part? I mean, like, I didn't really care anything about the medieval storyline that was going on. I really just didn't care.
Yeah. And you like how that lady dropped her towels though? That was pretty cool.
Yeah. There was moments, but it was just like
Yeah.
I don't need this.
She threw them on the floor. But yeah, that was dumb, and I didn't relate to any of that. I guess it did make for good set pieces for him to travel through while he's running from Yul Brynner.
Right.
It also made those worlds seem very small, and that there were only like four guests at the entire thing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I wish that didn't feel like that. Like the show has done a better job of vastness. It's like this is huge, and we are all over the place, and we have so much land dedicated to this in the Old West that you know you'll never find the end of it or the edges of it. And I love that.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, if you focus on too many characters, then you lose the impact of them dying. I totally agree.
They just weren't enough secondary like crowd shots.
Yeah.
It was just,
oh, I see what you're saying. Sure.
Yeah. Just to give you the feeling that the world was bigger. I didn't need to know who they were so much, but
like when you're in a bar and outside there's a bunch of shooting going on and it's never ending shooting for hours. Yeah. Like, I get it. I totally get it. Right. That's way cheaper than actually showing me all of that. But it's so annoying.
Yeah. It is annoying. And also, it also reminded me and gave me time to think, oh, you know, sure, they can stop you from shooting the gun directly at the person. But God, with that many bullets, something's going to hit you. Somebody's
right, exactly.
Hurt.
You're just standing in the wrong place behind a robot.
Ricochet.
Right.
How'd you guys feel about his low battery gun. That was pretty funny.
I kind of thought that was kind of fun. I was like, oh,
it's very funny. Yeah.
It made me laugh. I don't know if it was meant to make me laugh, but it did.
Yeah. And it ends up, that ends up with him, you know, everything's breaking down. He can't see as well anymore. He gets blinded by some torches. And then we get the best stunt I've seen in a long time, which is a guy in a full fire suit, like full on 100% engulfed.
Oh, no, so kidding. Like
flammable. Everything. Is it made out of gas? Right.
Yeah. Jesus. That looked, that was a little more intense. I don't know. I guess I just didn't expect it.
Yeah,
they must not have heard of anything flame retardant. I thought the whole thing here to me, though, the whole moral of the story was to me was that in the future, we don't have a fire marshal anymore. Apparently, you know, it's just the Wild West in the future. You can freaking have doors that lock that you can't escape from a heat room. Mm-hmm. You got robots that are extremely flammable, not Scotch guarded or anything. I don't know. It seemed a little ridiculous to me. Where's the fire marshal?
Scotch guard does the, is that flame retardant? I thought that just made
I think they added, I think there's some additives to a Scotch guard that you can do.
That's
that
amazing. I love that.
I forget what the real stuff is called that makes it flame retardant.
Well, one other thing, don't set off an explosion in a room that you are in to try to blow down a wall. An explosion big enough to blow a hole in the wall,
the jail wall,
is going to also
come back to you.
It's going to also murder you. Like I'm here to tell you, I have been like, I think some of my hearing loss came from being in a room with a very small firework going off. It does not take a lot of an explosive to injure.
Yeah. No, that's why I have friends with horrible hearing that do gun range all the time. And even though they wear the muffled earmuffs, stuff, it still affects you, man.
I want a towel that will hug me so tight that I can kick down a door. And I won't lose my. I can't even walk through the house without my towel falling off. Oh, sorry. Magic, excuse me.
That was magic wardrobe. What was that?
Yeah, that was fancy.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he looked real stupid. Richard Benjamin's still alive too, by the way. He's with us. So James Brolin, nice. Richard Benjamin, Alan Oppenheimer. Actually, I'm gonna. Oh, Dick Van Patten died, but and so did she. Anyway, they're the three.
A lot of dead people.
So no, I was gonna say more people died than haven't, but you know, the big three, your big three, they all lived.
Dick Van Patten died in 2015.
Yep.
What about Norman Bartold? Like, why does he get a high credit? Norman Bartold is like the fourth name you see in the credits.
He's the dude who gets killed by the Black Knight.
Oh. Right. Yeah. Okay.
That's all he has. All he has is with this fight scene.
Wow. And, you know,
I don't get it.
I still don't know. I kept having to remind myself he's a guest. This isn't some secondary robot moment. Yeah. I don't know. That stuff was weird.
I do like his expression when he looks over at his wife, who's like all of a sudden super excited about Medieval World. Watching the orientation video, like,
hi there. I didn't know you could do that. Well, then.
These guys are all busy still.
Huh.
They're all working. Man.
They're all doing the work.
I didn't expect that for whatever reason. Yul Brynner would have been like 150 by now, so he can't do it. But he's great. It did make me want to watch some of his old movies, like Magnificent Seven's an easy pick, but I really like him. He plays Ramesses in the Ten Commandments. I really like him in that.
See, that's like I kept calling him Ramesses the whole movie. Ramesses with a gun.
Yeah.
And I actually, again, I said this last week, I don't think he's a very good actor. He doesn't have any range at all.
No, as Ramesses
in the Ten Commandments, he is just this like barely English speaking, you know?
Yeah. To me, he's like Arnold, at least young Arnold. You got one mode and it's Arnold. Right.
It's true.
And in some ways he's like, you know, that era's Schwarzenegger in a weird way. But
I'm glad we just watched a movie where Yul Brynner, this famous old actor, is playing the center of his skills. Like, this is the best thing he could have ever been cast to do.
Yeah. I agree. And this was his fourth to last movie. He did Westworld, Ultimate Warrior, whatever that is.
Ultimate Warrior, man.
Future World, and then Death Rage. All of those sound bad and probably worthy of the show.
Death Rage sounds pretty cool. I like that idea. Death Rage.
Death Rage.
I'm so angry about being dead. It really burns me up.
I really want to sack the Ultimate Warrior with you guys.
Yeah.
I saw it once when I was little, and I barely remember any of it, but I want to read to you the description of this movie.
Go.
A virus holocaust is not the only plague that threatens our future. In New York City in 2012 AD, in a plague-devastated world, one tired man finds a reason to fight.
Oh my Lord.
I love it when I love stories that wrap around a tired man. Yeah. Right. Like fallen. Tired that's a great man. Yeah.
Starring Yul Brynner and Max von Sydow.
Wow. Oh, they both sound tired.
Yeah, they do.
Those are both tired
falling
actors.
Down. Great comparison, falling down. By the way. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's the most tired anyone's ever been.
Max von Sydow, Sydow, however you say it, when he was 30, he looked 90. I don't understand
yeah,
that guy.
That's true. Yeah.
His physiology was just weird, that guy. But Death Rage also looks good. Listen to this. A retired hitman. He plays a hitman. Retired hitman decides to take one last job to avoid the murder of his brother by a mafia gang. An eager would-be mobster helps him.
A mafia gang.
Yeah.
Seems redundant.
Doesn't it? It does seem redundant, right? It's wet
it's a
rain.
Mafia gang.
See, there's Con a poster.
La rabbia agliocci.
Yeah, this is obviously
this is an Italian film.
Italian film, right? But look at him in there. Look at that.
Yeah.
That painting is awesome,
Martin
dude.
Martin Balsam also in that.
Yeah. He's cool. Barbara Boucher. I think she shows her boobs.
Yeah, it's an Italian film. We're going to see some boobies.
What is that one guy going through the windshield? He's pulling a Deadpool kind of moment there.
Yep.
Oh my God.
And that car, is it crashing away from Yul Brynner?
Right, exactly.
I don't know.
At the front of the car or the back of the car?
Is Yul Brynner shooting that guy on the side of the head? I mean, that's not really how you shoot people. And where is he at? Is he on the back of the car? Is he... Yeah. I've got questions.
Yeah. I have questions I would like to
and
see.
And I'm sure the movie wouldn't answer any of those, by the way.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not.
Looks great, though. Jeez.
Ocho!
All right, I'm going to do some clips now. This is clips for the film Westworld, as you may have just heard. And we're going to go ahead and do them. So here's some weird thank yous. These creep me out. I don't know why these happen, but here you go.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Why was that so drawn out? What happened
there? It was so weird. Yeah, the interviewer guy, that's from a sales piece, like to get people to come to it. It felt like a news thing at the beginning, but...
Yeah,
it was a sales piece, and he was asking how people were that were returning from the different worlds, and she had just returned, I believe... From Roman world, and that was the implication. That was they were implying that the ladies like to go there and get the Spartans to rub all over you.
All right, here's Fan and the Gun.
Hey, what about the thing where you go like this over the gun,
Fanny?
Yeah,
what about it? Is that hard to do?
Is it hard to do?
I love that. I love
you're
that
doing it right
dialogue.
Now.
Yeah. Right?
And you're going to do it in your towel in about an hour or so.
Yeah.
Exactly. Ready, buddy? You say something, boy?
You say something, boy.
There's a little Yul Brynner. One of three lines.
He didn't say feeling that was his 47th take.
Yeah.
That was beautiful, though.
He barely ever talked. So, you know, 2-3 lines, I think, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Very little. Which was good because he's a robot. I mean, most of the programming's for walking and moseying. You didn't really have much room for dialogue, right?
Yep.
That was it.
Here's some other dialogue right here.
This place is really fun.
Oh, yeah, we heard that earlier. It's
wow. Couldn't hold the laugh in.
No.
Fun.
Here's some mumbo jumbo.
I must confess, I find it difficult to believe in a disease of machinery.
We aren't dealing with ordinary machines here. These are highly complicated pieces of equipment. Almost as complicated as living organisms. In some cases, they've been designed by other computers.
This is your Crichton exposition. Yeah. You know?
I do like that it's, you know, this is basically, he's describing a virus for the first time ever.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Yeah, like they'd never heard of those. In the future.
A disease for computers? What? Now I've seen everything.
I can't believe it. All right, here's a guy ordering food.
Yes, I want scrambled eggs and bacon, cinnamon toast. Do you have cinnamon toast?
Yeah, you heard me.
Do you have the cinnamon toast? Toast?
Yeah.
Cinnamon
what about toast. Cinnamon toast crunch?
Oh, do you have that? Hey, it's the 70s. Yes, do you have that then? Maybe.
Nope.
Here's some really bad singing. I think this is what, well, I'll tell you later what I think of this, but here you go.
Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam. And the deer and the antelope play.
He is so off key.
He is.
I love it. Yeah. Love it.
And I guess he's in a cavern.
Like I know, giant, that was so that
he's
tub.
That giant tub,
he's,
man.
He's currently riding the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
Right, right.
Somebody ran the cable through an echo pedal, and they just didn't know how to turn it off.
Right, yeah.
It was far too echoey for the space he was in. Yeah. It was poorly done.
It was a big tub, but I'm agreeing with you. That's
right. Here's Dick Van Patten deciding to sound not like him at all. So here's this.
Now, I'm the new law around here. You think you can handle things? You want to try me?
You want to try me?
Pee Wee Herman voice.
Yeah, it's weird.
Paging Pee Wee Herman.
How pissed would you be if you paid $1,000 a day and they put you in prison? Oh, my God.
That would suck.
That would suck.
Yeah, I'd be mad. See, that's why I'm saying this experience is a little uneven.
Yeah.
But the show was like that, too. It annoys me. They don't think of if you're going to gamify something, you got to think in those terms, and they never do.
Exactly.
Here's the problem with snakes. You got to check the snakes.
Pick up that snake for a total post at once and check all the snake central mechanisms tonight during the repair period.
He's just had to make a straight face and talk about fixing all the snakes. I think that's great.
What? I've got to go pick up all of the snakes that are currently malfunctioning? Screw you.
Guy. We hired you specifically to track every snake on the property. You are the snake manager. Oh. Would you get out there and pick up all the snakes tonight?
Yeah. But if they're good, smart robot snakes, they would all come back at the end of the day.
Right, like my
Roomba,
they all have a base station that they slither to at sundown.
Recharge.
Yeah, and the only one you got to worry about is the one that Brolin shot. So get her
just
done.
Just imagine, though, if, like, the battery runs out on us on one of the snakes, and you're like, oh, I got to go find the snake in the wilderness.
Yep. Right, it doesn't have, like, a air tag or anything that's functioning.
Yeah, and here's where Oppenheimer gets to talk about snakes one more time.
Well, a snake injured a guest. We can't allow that to happen.
No, we can't have. Look, I don't know about you guys, but if we're going to have guests, we can't have them get bit by snakes.
How the hell is this their biggest problem? Meanwhile, robots are hitting guests in the face with chairs in the bar.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's what I'm saying. They're worried about, this won't hurt, but then you're getting beat up. Come on. That annoyed me.
Literally, the broadcast announcer literally says nothing can go wrong over and over.
Right.
Like, why are you telling me this? That is not encouraging.
Were you trying to convince?
Yeah, they were setting you up. Here's something about being rash.
Oh, that seems rash.
Oh, that seems rash.
Oh, I thought you said that seems like a rash.
That looks like a rash. Yeah, have your doctor inspect your rash. My Lord and Daphne here. Enjoy.
My Lord.
Daphne.
My Lord.
Daphne.
My Lord forgets himself.
Yeah, the whole time I kept thinking he was saying Malort, and I thought of Brian.
Malort. I know. I was going to say something about that, too.
Yeah.
Malort.
Sound like Malort. I'm like, ugh.
Malort.
I'll never drink Malort. Because Brian Ibbett told me stories.
And definitely do not.
No, don't drink it, but everyone should taste it once just to understand the,
tasting it, technically drinking it?
No, you can get 10 finger. Milliliters in your mouth and get a taste. And
you can do a finger.
If that goes down your gullet, is that not a drink?
You chase it with, I don't know, chocolate ice cream or something. You need something waiting in the wings that's going to completely obliterate the
taste. What if you dip your finger in it and lick your finger off? Is that tasting or drinking?
That's tasting. I'm saying that's tasting.
Okay, so I could do that and not drink it.
Yeah, right, and I think everybody, you only live once, Scott.
I want to try it because Ibbett says such horrifying things about this drink that I kind of want to just get a taste so I can understand fully.
It's terrible, but it's not poison, is what I'm saying.
Right, no,
it's
poison.
It is actual poison.
It is. It's snake venom. Well, that seems right.
Origin.
All right. Yeah. Here's shut it down immediately.
Shut down. Shut down immediately.
Okay. Get that going.
All the detention levels.
Yep. Get them all.
But won't we be locked in here, sir, and then get really hot? Yeah. Whatever. Shut it down.
Shut it down. Smoke another cigarette. Fill this room with smoke. All right. Here's I'm shot. Oh, he's shot.
I'm shot. What?
What? You're shot?
What?
Shot. What?
What? What? no control over the robots. Guy says robots. I was waiting for this because I really wanted someone to say the timestamp on this. Yeah, I want people to say it. They did. I'm very happy. Here it is.
Sir, we have no control over the robots at all.
At all.
Robots at all.
Boy,
robots
he was using all kinds of language.
Yeah.
If you have problems with your robots, use robots at all.
Yeah, ask your doctor if robots at all is right for you. Sounds like a kid playing with the doorstop spring thing. This right here, I actually really like the music in the movie overall. I think generally, like when he's getting chased, I think some of that stuff's really good. But there's this bit.
Oh,
that drove me insane.
The chasing bit was a bit much.
Yeah,
because it was felt all kinds like of weird. Something. It, like the noise that somehow the gunslinger was making.
I don't know if they used a fiddle or what, but that definitely sounds like a really loose string, maybe like on a either a fiddle or a guitar or something, because there was some scratchy fiddling going on too and plucky fiddles.
The whole thing was done with a piano.
That part?
Reaching into the piano strings?
Right, so there's pianos being played, and then there's piano strings being scratched with a pick. And then that last thing is you've taken the lowest string on the piano and you're taking it off of its moorings and you're flapping it back and forth.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. It just bugged me because it sounded like a kid fiddling with the door and I'd be like, Nick, stop it. Like,
Stop it.
Nick, I'm on a phone call. Please stop flicking. That's what that would be. All right. Here's your final moment in the movie I thought was super dumb. And they did this while you zoomed into Mustache Man's face.
Boy, have we got a vacation for you. Vacation for you. For you. For you.
That so much.
No, you.
I don't remember it going on that long when I was watching it. Holy crap. Wow. It's one of those things like, you know, out of context. Without the visuals, it feels like it's 18 minutes long.
Yeah, and I faded that out. I actually didn't even do the full length. So if you thought that felt long, I could have given you a whole another second and a half of it. It's just so weird. Like, you've got a pretty good ending. You could just walk off into the distance and not. I don't know what you do, but you don't just zoom the camera in and play that. That was dumb. I hated that.
Yeah, this sound designer was a guy named Richard Church, you know, Dick Church.
Dick Church.
And
go every Sunday.
He had a pretty good career. Like he was called upon to do sound design for a number of successful things. Just in this case, I feel like he was high, maybe. He was doing
He was definitely on
the... We need some sound work. Bring me Dick Church, they'd say.
Phoning it with an actual phone cable.
Yeah.
Bring me Dick Church and give him a little piece of LSD before he gets into the studio.
That's right. Yeah, bring me... Somebody get Dick Church on the phone. I love that name. All right, well, there's that. Now this. It's time for the checklist, damn it. Here you go. Here's your checklist for the week. Best robots, but worst golf tires. Check.
Oh, yes.
Don't feed robot ladies liquids. Check. And finally, singing off key in the tub is probably what caused the glitch. Check.
Oh, it was all his fault.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. As soon as he did, it hit a certain note, like a brown note, you know, and everybody went, oh, shit. Oh, worst sentient. The snakes are going to bite me.
Richard Benjamin is a real survivor in this movie, but not because he's like actually good at it. Like he doesn't even know that the bottoms of the soles of his shoes are leaving behind heat.
That was weird. Wasn't that weird?
Hey, remind me of this. Did these two know each other or did they meet when they got there and then just hung out the rest of the time?
Oh, they definitely were friends from before.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah. I wasn't quite getting that at the top, and I couldn't tell if I'd missed something or whatever.
I don't know. Do you really? Because I was taking it as they just met, because Richard Benjamin's character would have known that Brolin had been doing this multiple times and didn't need to watch the orientation.
Oh, right. Like in the hovercraft thing, he kept looking at him going, he kept annoying him like a passenger on a plane would. And then he would like turn away, like, okay, we're done talking now.
Like,
and then
that would have been covered with the two of them having dinner after Brolin's first time going to Westworld.
Yeah, I think these two, I think they met, they became lovers, and then they died.
Yeah, they fell in love. And
they performed coitus in the tub.
And what do you call this? Fanning?
As soon as he saw him shoot Yul Brynner in a towel that wouldn't move. They got into that tub and they made it. They consummated it. It all worked out.
I am proclaiming that they were friends before this flight.
I believe they were friends before this flight.
I think I'm Team Gibbet. I think they just met.
Patrons, voice your opinion on our Patreon.
Yeah, let us know
in the comments.
Send us an email. Comments. Let's finish this battle of the men. All right, here's the soundtrack grade that we promised. Oh no, we got to get the Star Trek connections. Do that first. I know there's at least the Major Barrett, but are there more?
Sure. I'll just run through some others here. So one of the scientists, his title in the movie was supervisor, was played by someone named Davis Roberts. Davis Roberts was in the original series, and he played Dr. Ozaba in the episode The Empath. Mm. Another technician, his title was technician. I think this is the guy on the golf cart who gets shot out in the desert. was Kenneth Washington, the actor Kenneth Washington. He was also in Star Trek, the original series. He played Watkins on the episode That Which Survives.
Yeah.
Of course, we have Alan Oppenheimer, our main sort of villain. Our main villain?
He's not really a villain. He's more like a...
Yeah.
I mean, he's like Dr. Hammond. He's just running the park. He's trying to do his best. He's the one that's saying we should shut it down if there's a problem. He was actually kind of sympathetic, I thought.
He was he was used by several Star Trek franchises as different roles. There's our older wise man kind of character. In The Next Generation, he was also in Deep Space Nine, and he was in an episode of Voyager. Majel Barrett is probably our most prolific person to ever be on Star Trek. She died in 2008, so she would have been on everything.
Oh yeah,
if they could have. But she was in the original series as Christine Chapel. She was in the animated series. She was in Star Trek movies number 1 and 4, the motion picture and Voyage Home.
Yep.
Of course, she was constant in that time frame for The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager.
Yep.
This was her like. She's on everything.
Like she was like John Ratzenberger. John Ratzenberger for Pixar. She was for Star Trek. That's how it works.
Right. She's like credited in literally every episode of some of these shows.
Yeah.
So just an amazing run. She was Gene Roddenberry's wife. You can't have a better Star Trek connection.
That's the biggest connection there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's all I'll say about that. Yeah. I'm sure they had a lovely sex life. All right. Well, moving on. Let's get to the soundtrack. Right, I'll give it a PGWSHTF for pretty good when this shit hits the fan. And I thought it was really fun when it got crazy at the end.
I came away thinking, meh. I like where it's orchestrated. It's not bad.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the bar music. I didn't see it as a complete score, is what I'm saying.
I didn't like the hillbilly knee slapping stuff when they were fighting in that. Yeah. I didn't like any of that.
The bar knee slapping. Yeah,
that's dumb. I know it was a trope then, and it's probably one that they were right to lean into for the era, but that annoyed me.
Orchestrated stuff, they used a composer named Fred Carlin. He was perfectly successful, had a nice career, did a lot of stuff that you've just never really thought of.
Any relation to George Carlin?
No, it is spelled with a K instead of a C.
All right. Well, that'll be fine. all right. The alternate titles we got to do the Twitter post. I'm doing this all backwards. What's wrong with Scott today? I don't know. Someone reboot me. I got the new virus. Sum this thing up in 280 characters or less for now. We'll see what happens to Twitter. Anyway, let's start this week with Randy. Hey.
Westworld, a lot of real dudes and a few fake women get together in a place built by men and operated for men's pleasure. And then the machines go haywire, just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Aw, yeah, it's back, baby.
Yeah, I haven't heard that in a while.
Brian World.
Nice. Speaking of Brian, let's go next to Dunaway. What do you got there?
Westworld. No time for Jurassic Park? Maybe this movie is for you. Hashtag you'll love it. Hashtag Murderbot. Murderbot.
Murderbot.
Hashtag Murderbot is not going to fly on Elon Musk's Twitter.
That's the reason why I'm just posting this on, was it Retro? No, Retro. Yeah, so what
counter
is it?
Social. Counter Social.
Mastodon.
Scott, we're moving our Twitter posts.
Yeah, let's do it.
What's our character limit?
It's 500 on there. I think I'm going to call it, you know, I'll just start calling it our social media post, and that can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. Okay.
No more limits. But speaking of no limits, let's go to Brian Ibbett next.
Ooh, that's me. That's my middle name. Westworld. The movie actually plays out like a typical year. It has its ups and downs. It begins with way too much drinking and ends with a Westworld. The movie actually plays out like a typical year. It has its ups and downs. It begins with way too much drinking and ends with a burning Yule log.
A Yule log.
That's good. I kept trying to think of a good joke for him being dead and burning, and I couldn't do it, and you did it. Nicely done.
I did it.
You did it. No limits of it. Did it once again. All right, now this. Time for the alternate titles. This was almost called Reel to Reel Computer World, but they decided against that.
What was up with all of those recordings?
Oh, there were many. There were some.
That's how you would do.
Do you have to... Do you really have to be like, it just seemed like a lot. That computer room had a lot of recorders. But
that's what computers were back then. That's what everyone knew them as. They were big mainframes full of tape. It was just the way of it. And it's a bummer. But if I were them, I would have taken like an old water station or something where they just had a lot of knobs and switches and just full Star Trek it. You know, like, it's not like you didn't have that example already. So I would have done that, but whatever.
Yeah.
Or they almost called it Face Off, Yul Brynner. Sorry. Oh. Let me do that again. Face Off, Yul Brynner Believe It. So I tried to do a play on words. It wasn't as good as Yule Log because it's literally Yule. But anyway, let's move on to the emails that we get here on the show. We got one here from they just say greetings programs. They didn't put their name. But anyway, filmsack@gmail.com. They say, hello, Scott, Brian, and Randy. Greetings from Mexico. Oh, he says it here. I'm David. First time writing in, but have been listening since Kroll, albeit somewhat inconsistently, but you guys are still my favorite movie podcast. Well, thank you very much for that. So I was re-listening to the Jingle All the Way episode, and I'm sure since you already probably received emails about it, it may be already over, but here goes anyway. They're called Tacos de Cabeza, head tacos. You can get eyes, tongue, cheek, brains, meat, or a mix of all of those things called Certito. Barbacoa is not the same as cabeza. Also, barbacoa has variations. It can be made out of goat or lamb or something other than beef. And
goat.
Also beef if you want. It can be made in huge ovens or in a more traditional method in a hole in the ground. There's a hole in the ground. Anyway,
a hole in the ground.
I also recently listened to the Fugitive episode and heard you enjoy David Roebuck in it. If you want to get your Roebuck on again, you may recommend the 1989 movie Disorganized Crime. I think it's a perfect movie for sacking. Has a great cast. Daniel Roebuck, Ed O'Neill, Fred Gwynn, Lou Diamond Phillips, Ruben Blades, in a comedy about a bank heist organization by a guy who gets arrested before he can welcome the crew he assembled. Only thing is, it's $4 to rent and not streaming anywhere right now. Anyway, thanks for the great work. Love the podcast. Always put me in a good mood.
Ooh.
He says, well, that's cool. The cabeza thing, that's he matches my memory of people telling me how meat worked for authentic Mexican food. So
yeah, I mean, there's a great place in Vegas called Tacos El Gordo, and you can get a lot of those that he described, lengua and cabeza, and you know, all these great meats.
Is lengua the tongue? Is that what that is?
Lengua's yes. Tongue, yeah.
And you really like that, right? You were raving about that.
I do the tongue. I do. I don't like the head meat. Like, yeah. I don't like the cabeza, but I'll totally do the lengua.
You'll do the tongue.
I don't remember anything about the Jingle All the Way episode. I don't know what this is.
I know exactly.
I just know that I grew up in South Texas, where on Sundays and only on Sundays, every little restaurant had barbacoa de cabeza.
Yeah,
and it was dangerous. You were taking some risks. Yeah. If you went ahead,
you were getting some mad cow that day.
Yep. You might find a eyeball floating there.
You never
that
know.
Didn't happen.
Well, here's what did happen. We got some texts in the meantime as well, and these came to us at 801-471-0462. This one's about Westworld, and it just confirms what I was talking about earlier. I also noticed this. Berman Nate says, I didn't realize Christian Bale and Pedro Pascal were immortal and doing movies in the 70s. I think they are the spitting images. Yeah, you're not wrong.
I can see that. Yeah.
I really
good
do.
Call.
It was weird to see how close, especially Bale and James Brolin. They look the same.
Yeah, it's really very weird. Similar look to them.
Here's one from the Flint Man who says, Film Sack, I think before 2022 is over, you guys should sack Soylent Green since it takes place in the year 2022. Think about it. Flint Man. Well, A, I didn't know it took place in 2022. And B, we've had that on our minds for 10 years. So why
for
don't
sure,
we,
sure.
We should get it in?
Because it's people, right?
It's a big people, yeah. It's got your, damn it, Bill Clinton, you'll take this gun from my dad.
Charles Heston.
Yeah, Charles
we
Heston.
Just saw with an eye patch.
That's right. Eyes. He had pink eye.
And Scott, you know, you just said a little while ago that 1973 was just not really a great year for movies. And I mean, Soylent Green is one of the better 1973 movies. I don't know if that says anything.
Yeah. Is that streaming? Anyone see?
It is not. I just looked it
up. Okay. I'd love to get that one in. So we will do our best, the Flint Man. Again, that email address, filmsack@gmail.com. The text address or phone number is 801-471-0462. I would like to welcome people to our Patreon.
Yes.
Yes. Hold on. I thought I had it up and it's not up. Oh. What have I done? Somebody call Dick Church in here and we'll get it fixed.
Bring me the head of Dick Church.
It's not loading. Why? There might be an outage. Okay. Well, that's no good. All right. Well, I'll try to figure this out. But hey, if you're a listener and you're like, hey, I've already signed up. Great. We already love you. And you already know the benefits of great monthly benefits. I just put up a whole episode about why I love Fury Road so much. Not just talking about that I love it, but why. What are some of the reasons? What are some of the plot points? What are some of the moments in the film that make me go gaga for the 2015 Mad Max Fury Road? Well, I did a whole episode on it. So go listen.
I'm just amazed that it's been, what, 5 years?
Six.
Six years?
Yeah.
And this is still like an ever-present, like ready-to-go topic for you.
Oh, 100%.
It's just amazing.
I just watched it again. I mean, I watch it like every month. I love it. I love that movie. And I watched it again. This time was for this reason, because I wanted to capture some clips as I went for this bonus monthly episode I did, which I don't normally record while I'm doing it. But yeah, I love it that much. And I, you know, people, you know, varying degrees of irritation that I bring it up all the time. But I thought, you know what? I never really get into the minutiae of why. So I did. And I think people will enjoy it. And there's lots of other stuff from each of us up there. You get one every month. You never get commercials. You get these monthly specials. You get pre-show content every week. And you also get cool stuff in the mail. Like at the top level, Brian just sent out these rad magnets. Bunch of you others get art every month. It's just a cool That's place right. to be. So sign up today at patreon.com/filmsack and you'll get those cool benefits as well.
I haven't even told you guys this yet.
What's
this
that?
Is me telling you guys something for the very first time. Go. And I'm foolishly doing it while recording.
Do it.
I'm working on some t-shirts.
Yeah.
Oh. I happen to have a big box of blanks in my garage. I've had it for a while, this big box of blank t-shirts. And I've decided, you know what? I'm gonna slap something on these things and make a custom exclusive FilmSack Patreon shirt.
Wow, very cool.
That's good.
We'll see how it goes, but it's I'm very excited. Very excited.
All right, here it is. I did have their names. We got Brett Boatwright, Dan, and JP.
Woo! JP.
Thanks for joining us on the Patreon, you guys. All right, our next movie is gonna be Fire in the Sky, 1990-something.
1993.
Right. Watch it after you watch Smoke on the Water.
Oh, wait. What's Smoke on the Water? What is that?
Smoke on the Water.
Oh, and then Fire in the Sky. Yeah. I get it.
That's some jokes. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry that you had to explain.
I should have been there for you.
I should have too. I feel bad because it was very good. It's my kind of joke, even.
That's all right. That's all right. There was one person in our audience that laughed at that, and then the other was like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. I get it.
Another music freak like Brian out there really got right, it. But exactly. Fire in the Sky, the alien abductions, the T-1000's in it, Robert Patrick. You got all kinds of reasons to watch it. Peter Berg's in it.
Berg, is that the
Peter
one based Berg. On the true story?
Yes.
Or the true recounting? True-ish.
The true recounting.
Based on a guy who says it really happened to him, and it also was filmed here where I live in my home state of Utah, and it was also the event supposedly happened here, so I have a vested interest in those dumb details. So that's all coming up. Fire in the Sky next week. Where is it showing?
Paramount.
Somewhere online.
One place.
We have to watch it on Paramount. It was on Amazon Prime for us until like 2 weeks ago. So we have to watch it on Paramount. It is on Paramount. I checked it before the show. It is working just fine. Okay. Sorry about that, but it works.
Yep. Also on Epix, I guess, if you have that, and DirecTV has it, if you're subbed to that. Anyway, so that is next week right here on FilmSack. Find out what happens to Peter Berg when he gets sucked into the sky. we already did that. Okay, FilmSack.com is our website. Don't forget that. And send us those emails, FilmSack@gmail.com. Once again, that text number is 801-471-0462. And on Twitter, while it lasts, we're at FilmSack. Leave us a review wherever you get your shows, too. That helps us a lot with discovery and the like. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Nothing can go wrong.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.
This place is really fun.
Yeah.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.